Hi there, welcome to our virtual ILS NYC 2021 event broadcasts. Obviously, we're disappointed not to be in with people in person this year, but we're going to make the best of it with these recordings and hopefully bring you insights from experts in the industry. Please do visit the event website to see the details of our kind sponsors, without who we couldn't put on this event. And you will also be able to view all of the video content from the conference, which will be archived there for you to view at your leisure. So with our event, we're looking at the development of the insurance and securities market, always with one eye to the future. This year, we focus on defining the next generation of the sector, a broad and ambitious topic, but hoping that our expert guests can help us with this. And for this particular broadcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Marcus Rivaldi, Managing Director of Analytics at Specialist ILS and Reinsurance Investment Manager 12 Capital. Welcome, Marcus.
Thanks much, Steve.
So we're going to be discussing a hot topic today. It's environmental social governance and ESG, and what the ILS sector needs to consider moving forwards to ensure it can meet the demands of ILS of investors for ESG compatible returns and also capitalize on the opportunity that this presents. So to kick things off, perhaps Marcus, you could give us a bit of background and explain how ESG investing differs from a more traditional return oriented approach.
Happy to do so, Steve. I guess before we start, though, it's worth reminding ourselves where ESG investing approaches are exactly the same as traditional investing approaches, in that ESG investors, don't forget, are also seeking attractive returns from their investments in line with expectations they've been guided to. And against the backdrop of an extremely volatile financial market year last year, I think industry and catastrophe bonds in particular really lived up to expectations, delivering attractive, lowly correlated returns to the investors. So based upon that performance, and certainly based upon expectations going forward, I think I would argue that ILS is a very attractive asset class for people to be looking at in 2021. But if we're looking at ESG investors in particular, I think there are some differences, and I'd highlight maybe three. So first of all, ESG investors for me are particularly interested in opportunities that are flowing from the ESG agenda. So for example, think about transitions within the global economy, such as the move from fossil fuels to green technology. Also, ESG investors generally think about a broader range of risks against which to consider investment opportunities than maybe traditional investors might do. So they will be thinking about non-traditional, extra-financial type of risk factors, some of which are expected to materialise only over a long period of time and only very gradually. So again, think about climate change as an example. And then finally, ESG investors are also interested in ways in which their investment can generate some additional social or environmental benefit to mitigate and manage down those additional risks that they see when considering investments.
Absolutely. So some different motivations there, indeed. But overall, still a viable investment that people are looking to gain returns from. So can you lay out perhaps the size of this opportunity for our viewers and listeners? And I guess, why should our listeners and viewers care about ESG?
Well, they certainly should care because the ESG investor community is already very, very large and it's growing rapidly. So to illustrate, there was a very interesting report out last year from PwC that focused on Europe and the European mutual fund sector. The data ended at 2019, but at year end 2019, PwC identified around 1.6 trillion of assets under management within mutual funds labelled as ESG funds, and that represents around 15% of the total funds outstanding. What was also very interesting in the report were some of the trends that are observed around ESG, both historically and also some of the projections being discussed prospectively about ESG investing. So historically, between 2012 and 2019, PwC found that ESG label funds have been growing at a compound annual growth rate of over 14%. And that compares to less than 8% for more traditional strategies. So ESG growing much faster than more traditional funds. And then looking forward out to 2025, PwC is projecting that ESG funds could represent upwards of 40% of the total mutual fund AUM by 2025. And to get there, that requires a compound annual growth rate of over 20%. So, you know, a big constituency already, growing fast historically and expected to grow very fast prospectively. But why is that happening? Again, there's a number of reasons, but I'd highlight three. First of all, regulatory change. Here in Europe, we've got in 2021, the incoming Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, which is encouraging asset managers to think about how they should be categorizing their funds from an ESG perspective. Secondly, absolutely increasing investor demand, the end investor really wanting to see how they can put money to work in ESG strategies. And that has a very strong intergenerational component to it, with millennials, whenever they're polled, indicating greater interest in ESG opportunities than, say, their parents might. And then finally, I don't think we can ignore the turbocharging effect of interest in ESG and sustainability from recent events such as the COVID pandemic.
Wow. So those figures are really quite enormous. So some sizable flows available in investment markets for the asset classes that can meet those ESG goals, I suppose. So more than the size of the opportunity, why is ESG so particularly relevant in ILS and reinsurance, do you feel?
So, you know, this conference is all about, you know, how engagement between capital markets and the insurance industry can be further deepened and broadened prospectively, you know, with ILS as the key transmission mechanism between the two. So, you know, we've already talked about that, you know, expectations are that ESG investing is going to become an even more significant component of markets going forward. And that given those growth projections, it's fair to say, in my view, that we should be expecting ESG investors to be looking for new routes and opportunities to deploy their capital. So with that in mind, you know, I think the big win for the reinsurance industry ultimately is greater financial flexibility from being able to tap into the substantial and deep investor base. Meanwhile, for the ILS community, the big opportunity here is growth, which comes from being part of that investment process of ESG investors getting involved in the reinsurance space, but also becoming a more prominent, taking a more prominent role in that transmission between capital markets and the insurance industry. So ultimately, for both, interest and support from the ESG investor community is the key prize. But I think it's fair to say that that interest and support is conditional. And again, I would say another three reasons here why that, you know, what are the key factors that ESG investors are looking for? You know, number one, I think they want an investment opportunity that is sizable, is attractive, and has the potential to grow further with their engagement. You know, secondly, clearly, they want an investment opportunity that is aligned with their ESG interests. And then finally, you know, they are risk conscious, as any investor are, and they want to make sure that the associated risks, including these additional ones that they look at, are demonstrably well modelled and understood. So if you can tick each of those boxes and convince in all three, then I think that opens the door for a real interest and support from ESG investors.
That's really interesting. I mean, obviously ILS, ESG is a very hot topic right now, as we said at the start, and getting a significant amount of attention, but it's all going to be down to how the industry embraces that and actually aligns itself with the goals of these investors as well. So you've explained the opportunity itself in terms of relevance to the market and its size and importance, but what challenges do you perceive as ILS markets look to embrace ESG and meet the demands of these sometimes very large allocators?
So I think at the moment, the industry is spending a lot of time, you know, convincing on the broad investment opportunity, i.e. why invest in insurance? How does that, at a sector level, an industry level, align with ESG interests? And again, the key focus here tends to be on how insurance acts to enhance resilience in society through, you know, closing protection gaps, you know, the gap between economic losses sustained and the available insurance coverage, you know, how the insurance industry uses its underwriting skills and to do that, and how also they leverage their investing activity to support improvements in resilience. And the opportunity is clearly very sizable. You can just look across lots of examples. We can go to the US, look in California. The California Department of Insurance estimates that over 85% of policies within the residential homeowners market there do not include any earthquake insurance. Or you can flip onto the other side of the US and you can look at US government data, which shows that more than 80% of residential properties in Florida are not insured against coastal flood. You can come here to the UK, and companies such as Prudential PLC estimate that in Asia, over 80% of people have no health insurance coverage. And of course, you know, events as they unfold uncover new protection gaps all the time. So we're living through, obviously, this COVID pandemic at the moment. And you know, the issues around business interruption coverage linked to the pandemic are a very, very hot topic. So, you know, there's plenty of scope for the insurance industry to step up and fill protection gaps if it's backed by additional investment. But again, as what we'd argue is that that sort of industry level analysis is now insufficient for ESG investors. They want to go deeper, and certainly regulations are pushing us in that direction too.
And what about the alignment of sort of ILS with ESG goals? I mean, how important is it that the industry finds ways to clearly demonstrate that?
And I think that's really crucial, because that is about how you go from that simple industry level analysis, which is, you know, insurance is all about building resilience in society, therefore please invest, to, you know, being more convincing about investments at an individual asset level. So to do that, you've got to go down a layer. You've got to move down from that industry analysis to analysis of individual insurance and reinsurance companies, in our view. So, you know, here at 12, we've been spending a lot of time revisiting our analytical approaches over the last few years on this topic to extend them beyond the sort of more traditional approaches, their traditional limits, to consider ESG factors and to embed additional processes. So for example, we now apply exclusions as an initial tool to sift clear outliers from our investment universe with reference to things that ESG investors would expect to see, such as norms-based standards like the UN's Global Compact and involvement with controversial activities. You know, some of those we take a zero-tolerance approach to, some are subject to revenue limits. Once you've done that sort of initial sifting, then it's about assessing individual opportunities, and we use very much a structured rating process to do that, that on a relative basis looks at individual investments across those E, S, and G pillars. So our approach is necessarily detailed, because it's got to be convincing for the ESG investor to show that you really are digging into the detail. We build it on, you know, pillars of analysis within, again, the E, S, and G factors. And during that process, you know, we consider insurance companies and reinsurance companies from a number of perspectives, including, you know, the corporate perspective. What are they doing as a corporate entity in terms of resource consumption and corporate governance, as well as this perspective of their business activity? So, you know, what is their specific role in building resilience across society, and how do they execute on that? You know, how are they influencing and driving positive change through their current underwriting approach, for example, through different incentives? So, for example, some insurance companies, AXA, for example, offers premium discounts to homeowners if they use green energy in the home. Other things we think about are, is ongoing underwriting support conditional on change being implemented, maybe over a transition period? Again, this is about the industry engaging with their clients to push improvements and changes that ESG investors would expect to see. And beyond discussions with their clients, what role are businesses taking in terms of engagement on a more broad-based view? So with partners in the value chain, national and local government, for example, And of course, we should ignore, you know, what are insurance companies doing on the asset side of the balance sheet too? Are they applying, you know, normal ESG principles to their investment activity? So we go into a very detailed analysis at that individual company and even individual asset level to give confidence around this point on ESG. Now, what I would say though, is there's some interesting observations we'd make from that process. So we're very lucky here at 12 that we have many engagements with insurance companies over the course of the year through investing in credit, equity, as well as ILS. And so we get a lot of opportunities to sit down with management teams and discuss what they're doing here. But when you look at the more general disclosure that we're seeing across the industry, there's some interesting things going on. You know, first of all, in general terms, I'd say that ESG relevant data quality and transparency remains a major issue for the industry. We currently observe no real meaningful consensus or standardization in terms of ESG relevant metrics. You know, most data is self-reported, which obviously raises concerns around reliability, you know, the risk of greenwashing, and even how relevant the reported data is to the actual business itself. I think also we often observe a lack of consistency across the balance sheet. So it feels often that insurance companies are much more willing to go further and more publicly go further on the asset side of the balance sheet, you know, lay out exactly what they're doing in terms of ESG principles around their approach to investing. Whereas on the underwriting side of the balance sheet, the liability side, they're a lot more coy, shall we say, about what they're really doing there. Now, is that just a function of a lack of joined-up thinking? Is that a function of maybe less corporate buy-in to ESG from an underwriting perspective? Or is it a function of maybe greater challenge in terms of the underwriting side of the business versus the asset side coming from ESG? And then I think the final thing I'd point out is that, you know, we see a lack of consistency geographically. And maybe this shouldn't be surprising given the that in Europe, we really are leading the charge here on ESG investing. And that's very much driven in part by regulatory approaches. But again, a very different level of disclosure we're seeing here in Europe compared, for example, to the US. So, you know, despite all those challenges, we do try to infill those gaps from a quantitative perspective with a lot of qualitative analysis. And again, that's helped very much by all those interactions we have with the industry. But I'd certainly say these disclosure-related issues remain a challenge. And ultimately, they're self-defeating, because if the industry can't convince credit in a credible terms about what it's doing from an ESG perspective at an individual company level, then effectively, they're creating a reason for ESG investors to go elsewhere.
Absolutely. And I was just thinking that's it's also relevant for the customer base of insurance as well. They are going to end up choosing their protection providers based on the quality of the company and also their ESG compatibility, as the average person in the street sees it as well. So it is self-defeating, as you said. That's a very, very good point. So that kind of lays out some of the challenges from sort of how the industry can demonstrate ESG compatibility and quality within its assets and its investment offerings, I suppose. But while there's going to be a new wave of investors coming to ILS, we believe, because of this interest and because ILS is inherently a product that does do some good in the world, it's also going to be vital to really demonstrate that the understanding and management of risks, which are perceived particularly the environmental, and obviously that raises climate as a factor. Are there any challenges on that side of the industry's offering?
Yeah, so I mean, listen, again, I think we keep saying to people, but, you know, don't confuse ESG investing with philanthropy. You know, ESG investors really need to be convinced that, you know, when they hand over their cash for you to invest, that, you know, we can demonstrate that we're putting it to work and that we really understand the risks, and they're very well modelled. And again, it wouldn't be a surprise, I guess, to say that, you know, climate change is probably the number one question we receive from ESG and other investors, frankly, looking at the ILS industry and opportunity. And frankly, you know, all the recent hurricane activity has just intensified that debate. Now, look, that is a very thorny issue. It's a very tricky one and to deal with. But you know, it's quite right that ESG and other investors challenge us on this as investment managers, and in turn that we challenge those seeking that investment to describe and talk about what they're doing and their understanding of climate change. I think it's pretty apparent that there are clear debates remaining and outstanding on perils and hazards, particularly at the moment, I'd say, you know, secondary perils, so severe convective storm, wildfire risk, and the impact on climate change on those perils. Now, I wouldn't say that their remaining uncertainty is a deal breaker for ESG investors necessarily. You know, the fact that you can't talk with, you know, 100% accuracy or certainty about climate change, for example, I don't think that's a deal breaker. But I think you need to be able to demonstrate that you're doing a lot of hard thinking about it, and that how you're demonstrating how you're considering that uncertainty within the broad investment process that you're applying. So across the entire analytics chain, across the portfolio construction piece, and also risk management from a risk management perspective. I think the other beauty, of course, about ILS is the ability to frequently reprice risk as new information, new research becomes available. And that is a big advantage compared to, you know, such as private debt, where capital is perhaps locked in for a 10-year period and you've got to make that decision on day one and there's not much you can do about it for 10 years. But giving that greater confidence that risks are appropriately priced in would absolutely, in my view, lead to stronger interest in and a lower risk premium for investment coming from ESG investors. And that means that, you know, more work has got to be applied to R&D, particularly in topics such as climate change. And certainly here at 12, we've been embracing that very significantly. Witness our relationship with climate tech firm Reask, who've very much helped us on the journey of understanding, you know, seasonal hurricane activity and also the longer term impacts of climate change on hurricane activity too.
That's great. Thank you, Marcus. Very interesting. I guess I might just put you on the spot slightly with a quick question. When do you, I mean, obviously that there's going to be different degrees of ESG compatibility of ILS fund strategies and investment strategies in the sector. I mean, do you have a feel for how long it could be until the industry really can unlock this sort of ESG focused investor base in a meaningful way?
So incoming EU rules, you know, provide for different sort of grades or shades of green, shall we say, within funds. Shall we say the lighter shade of green is where, you know, you absolutely think about traditional financial metrics, but also you're trying to promote a certain E, S or G factor within your investment approach. And I think that is more achievable for most, certainly for us here at 12, that is how we're looking to position, you know, our cap bond fund. The higher standard is called Article 9 funds, put sustainability as effectively the prime investment goal behind any investment approach. And I think, you know, given, I think the disclosure transparency issues, that perhaps at the moment is a step too far. But, you know, if the industry steps up, if we start getting this transparency disclosure of a quality that we really need, and there genuinely is this asymmetry between demand of knowledge and information from investors and what the industry is prepared to give, then who knows, we can then start moving to that Article 9 territory, and that would really be, you know, very attractive for ESG investors.
And that's a really sort of compelling reason for the industry to try and embrace transparency and to work on how information flows across the value chain as well. Thank you, Marcus. That was a very interesting discussion. I really appreciate you being part of this. Look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.